Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk, the podcast sponsored by FundApps, the compliance monitoring and reporting specialists. This season, we are talking tech. How is tech future-proofing financial services? What have we learnt? And what do we seem to never learn? As well as talking tech this season, in each episode, we get to know our experts on a more personal level and get them to share a bit about their pet hates and what's on their wish list. It's time to meet today's guest. I'm Sally Yates, and I'm your host on Let's Talk. I'd like to say welcome today to Bernardo Castelbranco. Welcome, Bernardo.
Hi, thank you so much. A bit about myself to start with. I'm a director at Alpha FMC, which is a management consulting firm for the buy side. Been doing regulatory change for the last 15 years or so, both started in Portugal, where I'm from, and then moved to the UK 12 years ago and have been helping the buy side with regulatory problems since then.
Fantastic. Thanks very much for that. So today on the Let's Talk podcast, we are talking to Bernardo about all things around future-proofing your business. Maybe if we start, Bernardo, talking a bit, as you say, Alpha is a management consultancy firm. And so you obviously get a good view of a number of companies and how they actually apply compliance within their businesses. And I imagine there are some differentials within that. So how is the role of compliance in your view, both as a function and for individuals, changing? And what do you see as the key drivers of that?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think from my perspective, the buy-side community, it's to some extent the slow adopter of change. So we see the demands for change going much more faster than actually how they are responding. But ultimately, the role of compliance has evolved significantly in the last 5 years, at least. I think we see a couple of drivers. So the pace of regulatory change has increased massively. So compliance officers within global organizations have to manage regulatory requirements, cross-border regulatory requirements across different regulators with different strategies and incentives. So that's one thing that's driving that change. So the ability to actually accommodate that pace and embed it in the organization. The use of technology and the data behind that technology has enabled them to actually start doing much more proactive surveillance and oversight and responding to regulatory demands much quicker. And that's where I see the main change in the compliance profile. I think until now we saw a lot regulatory specialists within those compliance functions. There's a drive to continue that, obviously, but to actually implement data and technology capabilities within those teams. And we see the leading firms bringing that into the second line to help them actually do ongoing and live surveillance, meet their regulatory disclosures, obligations, and reporting. And also another driver for change is the regulatory, the regulator itself. We see it as a shift since COVID. I think it's fair to say they were a bit dormant during COVID and they were worrying about, and rightly so, about other stuff. And now they are being a bit more intrusive into the organization. So that's changing the profile of the compliance function to be able to respond quickly to those requests. Some of the requests for data have 24 hours, 48 hours. So technology and data is at the center of what they do.
Thanks for that. Obviously, you mentioned technology and data in sort of like both of those examples. And you also talked about how the buy side is slower to adopt than maybe they need to be, which I think has been a theme on the buy side for quite a while now. So in terms of technology, where do you think the firms are actually progressing well? And where do you think maybe there's still a fundamental amount of catch up to do?
On the positive side, we see leading firms seeing technology as an enabler to their business. And that's where we see technology being well adopted and underpinned by the quality of data. So if it's aligned to the business strategy and they are able to demonstrate that both the business and the second line and operational functions within the middle and back office can actually leverage that technology. This is where we see good examples on the disclosure side, for example, and the reporting where firms have realized that without the use of technology, regulatory disclosures and regulatory reporting it's almost impossible to meet. If you have to submit data on a daily basis to the regulator, or if you have to monitor 80 or so disclosure regimes, Without the use of technology, it's practically impossible to meet those obligations on the front office, where the demands for more quality of analysis, quality of execution is increasing materially. And on the back office, where data underpins all the settlement and confirmation processes that need to happen. So we see that as a driver for actually then the adoption of data strategies that are across those middle and front office functions. On the non-so positive side, we see a lot of resistance from firms in taking market-leading vendors and technology to help them solve their problems, and a lot of potentially politics within firms to build it in-house versus outsourcing. Our view is that firms should stick to their core business capabilities, which is in this case investing money on behalf of clients and meeting their regulations and take advantage of the vendors that are out there, which are best in class to solve some of their problems.
Really interesting. So obviously we've talked a bit about technology, data, some strong adoption of that sort of like post-trade monitoring and reporting technology. Some adoption in the front office there. In terms of like the rest of the year, you know, what are you expecting to see this year? And how would you say that's going to be different from last year?
I think firms were expecting from the back end of MiFID II for the regulatory change and pace to change and to decrease a bit. I think give them a bit of breathing space to actually focus on BAU activities and efficiencies, etc. I don't think that's going to be the case. 2023 and 2024 are going to be very rich in terms of regulatory change and regulatory demands to firms. I think we have a number of initiatives on the ESG side, which will transform the way firms operate in this space. And they are somehow at some level contributing to each other. So SFDR in Europe, SDR in UK, the TCFD, the EU taxonomy is going to change how disclosures work in that space. And there's a massive investment from firms. First of all, to try to understand what all means, but also then to try to put together processes and technology to support those disclosures, which are quite important. Consumer protection is a biggie in UK, and it's starting to actually cross border into the EU. So consumer duty is going to be a massive change for in the way that firms deal and put clients at the center of what they do. And there's quite demanding requirements being imposed by the FCA. Divergency is going to continue. In a sense, I think we see different national authorities within the EU changing and implementing different interpretations of the disclosure regimes. We see a big push from the UK to actually simplify regulation and make the UK market a bit more competitive. But on the other side, we are not seeing that reflected in the policies they are launching. If you think about it, consumer duty is a bit of a contradiction to the Edinburgh reforms of simplifying and making the UK more competitive. And then on the reporting side, there's a massive change happening, both on the disclosure side, but also like on the G20 reporting derivatives, like the MiFID and the other rewrites. So fortunately for firms like ours, but unfortunately for the industry as a whole, the regulatory pace will continue to be quite high.
So, yeah, I mean, I think as you've quite demonstrated there, quite the alphabet soup of regulation, you know, thick and fast, lots of complexity, you know, striving for simplicity, but, you know, with that kind of pace and those kind of demands, I'd imagine there are some areas where the regulator's patience is wearing a bit thin. Where do you think that is focused?
Yeah, another very good question. I think if we take a step back and think about what the regulator is trying to achieve. So in essence, they have two key objectives like consumer protection and market integrity. And if you then think about the perimeter of firms that need to regulate, I think the FCA is over 30,000 firms that they need to look at. And the other regulators are finding similar challenges. So they are changing their approach to regulation to be a data-led regulator. And while we have been seeing that buzzwords for a while, I think now firms, we can say that regulators are actually driving their supervision strategy throughout data. And we know a couple of examples, the FCA keeps a register and a live dashboard of every single firm they regulate that automatically updates based on the submissions that the firms put through, and that is to monitor financial resilience and conduct. We see a lot of monitoring happening across for market abuse purposes using MiFIR data, which is submitted on a daily basis. We see a lot of, for example, the CBI and the CSF were monitoring the LDI exposure that happened in UK. What was the impact, knock-on impact on the Irish and Lux firms through the MiFIR data? We see the FCA and others being much, much more intrusive in the disclosure regime and being able to detect omissions much, much faster using the data they have available. So what I'm trying to get to is, because their supervision strategy is changing to be more data-led, more technology-focused, the quality they expect from firms is key. So that's one of the areas that the FCA and others are losing a bit their patience, is the quality of data that is being submitted by firms is still quite poor, to be honest. And that's preventing them from meeting their statutory objectives. Another driver is that there were a couple of scandals within the industry that the Treasury in particular actually almost pointed a finger to the FCA saying you probably didn't do as good a job as we expected. And I think they are under an increased pressure to be a bit more intrusive in monitoring those. But as a whole, I see data as the core of their strategy. And as a consequence, quality of data submitted is quite important.
As you say, Bernardo, data very much underpins all of the efforts that the regulators are making. And there has been a big push from regulators across the board to put data at the very heart of that regulation to try and get some sort of systemic oversight. But as you pointed out quite rightly, quality of data remains the perennial problem. And I don't think it's just a buy-side problem. We see that elsewhere. Yeah. In practical terms, what can firms actually do to try and make good, strong, and, you know, transformative strides towards getting better quality of data?
I think to start with, they need to put data at the center of what they do and think about the use cases and business cases that strategy will support. And that's quite important because I have a very almost linear view of the world. And I believe that the data that the investment managers are using is the same as the data that the dealing desk is using, is the same as the compliance team and so forth, and the reporting team. So ultimately, if they actually build that standardized golden source that is tested, owned, and managed through technology, then they can actually almost use it to different business cases. So we could, and that will improve the quality of data because then everybody is looking at the same standards and then manipulating the data as they see fit to meet their regulatory obligations, their business demands, their client demands. And I think that's where we see firms that operate well in this space to take as a competitive advantage. And making reg reporting, for example, not a cost center, but more a driver of value, because ultimately it's another layer of expertise that is looking at data. Underpinning that is bringing the right partners and vendors to actually help not only test, but actually manipulate and transform the data to meet your obligations and your needs. And I think that's key. At the center, a unique, robust and data lake that's supported by accountability and ownership and overall a data governance strategy, but then bringing pockets of good practice internally and from providers like yourselves to then meet your obligations.
Yeah, it's getting that internal sponsorship, isn't it, to sort of drive that change and, as you say, put data at the heart of what they're trying to do. And actually, in the long run, it actually simplifies it and makes it easier. But it's building that sort of like really strong base around data. Talking a little bit about you know, what we can learn from our customers and what you can learn from your clients. Henry Ford once famously said that if he'd asked people what they wanted when it came to how he should make better cars, he said they would have just asked for faster horses. Obviously, we're talking about technology on this season of Let's Talk. So what's the sort of like best story or input you've had from anyone, be it, you know, your colleagues, you know, customers, investors, whoever it may be, that has really helped you take a leap forward in terms of driving that sort of adoption of technology?
And it's back to my early point around having actually a purpose for that technology and data implementation and strategy, having a business case and being an enabler of your strategy and not implementing technology for the sake of it. I think firms that we see do this really well is they understand where are the core capabilities, where are competitive advantages, and they develop that internally and through the use of technology, obviously. And then they look at what other obligations they have to their clients, to the regulators, to the market. And they build it as business cases and user cases to leverage that technology. And a good example is regulatory reporting, where ultimately it's a consequence of your business and no one will win more clients or more revenue by doing regulatory reporting correctly, but it's a necessity, and it's and we are glad that it's a necessity because it does prevent a lot of regulatory risk, but ultimately it's not a competitive advantage. And that's where firms that have thought through the process of going from A, which is their activities, to B, which is their regulatory obligations, and how can they use technology to actually increase efficiencies, reduce risks, and ultimately potentially save costs, have been like firms that we see being early adopters of technology and doing this right. And there's a number of case studies like MiFIR, transaction reporting, shareholder disclosures, position limits, EMIR. They're all obligations that firms need to meet on a day-to-day basis, which they, if they don't bring technology and a good quality of and strategy around data, they won't be able to meet their obligations.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Compliance and everything that wraps around that is very often seen as a sort of like necessary evil. Is there any sort of like opportunity within compliance and those working in and around it for it to be a part of a sort of transformation of the business, a sort of a driver of change within the business, and changing that sort of mindset of, you know, well, I have to get it done. It's not a competitive advantage. You know, where does it become something transformational?
I think on the analytical side and the sort of, and the push for almost real life, real time surveillance capability, that's where we see a lot of innovation happening on the risk and compliance side. Because for the drivers we spoke earlier around, the regulator is doing the same. So compliance functions are trying to push for that capability in-house. And by doing that, they demonstrate the power of the data they're analyzing, and they can spot trends, they can spot behaviors and drive better outcomes from the first line. And that's where we see actually being a competitive advantage and the role of compliance changing massively from being, again, almost a second supervisor and there to tell, like acting as the police, to acting as an enabler, and not ostending the independence. They have to remain as an enabler and advisor to the business to do the right thing. And when they work hand in hand, that can bring real value. So I would say that data analytics is an area that compliance is investing and can bring differentiated.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, say that analysis, that monitoring and moving it from just being a sort of like post-trade activity to being that sort of like pre-trade analysis, that being able to like pivot based on the information you have at hand. Really appreciate all your thoughts there, Bernardo, on regulation, data, technology, so many different points. What we'd like to do now is for our listeners to get to know you on a little bit more of a personal basis. So we're going to go to Room 101. And for our listeners who aren't familiar with the concept of Room 101, it actually used to be a BBC series where celebrities, and today that's Bernardo.
good luck.
Put forward their sort of pet hates, the things that really niggle them in life. And so what would you like to put forward for Room 101 today, Bernardo?
Can I put two things?
Well, we can propose two things. We'll see if we'll allow them both.
So from a business perspective, I would say, and the topic of today, the complexity around reg reporting, I think it could be much simpler and ultimately could harvest the power of data to enable regulators to actually almost source it directly from firms and take all this buzz around and this cost around reg reporting. It will probably take us out of business, at least from our perspective, but ultimately I'll like to see that happening. From a personal perspective, you know those hand-drying machines that don't have any power? I find them so annoying. They're completely useless. And you just stuck there trying to hand dry your hands. It doesn't work. I think I will put them on 111. On that
one. Well, we've got some other nodding heads in the room, actually, while you're saying that. So I think, you know, that can be accepted. That can go into Room 101. I think in terms of the regulations and reporting and simplification, I think we just have to stick that on a wish list.
Probably.
A very long-term wish list, probably. Yeah. But I think it's a fair shout all the same. Do you have any favorite analogies about banking that are actually clean enough to share?
No, I have some. I have a few bad ones, but I won't share those. Good analogies. I work predominantly with the asset management community. I see them as gardeners, as essentially as a gardener. They, if you think about gardening, they have to plant the seed, take care of it, choose the right environment, and grow it, and then take the the pleasures of vegetables or flowers, etc. Investment manager is the same. You have to select the right stocks, the right strategy, nurture it, and then take the income and the outcomes of that strategy. I think as gardening, it has bad weather, unpredictable conditions, lack of skill, and then typically things go wrong, especially when I'm gardening. But yeah, that's my analogy.
Yeah. Okay. No, I like that one actually. Yeah. I'm just obviously wondering now, in that analogy, where does data sit? Is that the seeds or is that the soil or?
It's all the.
Is that the weather?
It's actually everything. It's the information you take to make the right decisions when to water the plants, when to feed them with products, etc. When to plant. I think all the data around the decision making. All the data around the control that you do to actually take the right decision on the gardening side is the same as the investment management. I won't recommend changing investment managers for gardeners. Probably the opposite could happen because sometimes they act by luck. But yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, there are many a bankers known to be sent on gardening leave. So
yeah,
I think,
exactly.
You know, that makes sense. Excellent. What's on top of your bucket list?
I have so many, My passion is surfing, so I would say surfing Jeffreys Bay in South Africa on a perfect day, not such a big swell, so I can handle it and with family and friends, and probably a beer at the end, fresh beer.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. So, you know, do you have like a Volkswagen Beetle that you pick around?
Probably.
In? Yeah.
That'll be great.
I like it. And if you could be a fly on the wall, whose conversation would you listen into and why?
I would say recent events. I'll probably listen to the conversation between King Charles and Liz Truss on her resignation.
I think his face said it all, didn't it, when she walked in the room?
Yeah, oh dear, I just want to hear what he said after. That would be very interesting.
No, absolutely. I like that one. You probably know that here at FundApps, we are a B Corper. We're 128th a company in the UK to become a B Corp. We're one of the first 1,000 in the world. And for us, it's all very much about, you know, good people, good business, good ethics. So what do these things mean to you, and how do you think that plays into future-proofing business?
I think it's at the core of the business if you want to continue to be sustainable and actually deliver value to across shareholders, society, employees, et cetera. I think it's at the core of the ethical behaviors, the good culture, where you put the clients and the employees at the center of what you do will inevitably bring better outcomes in the long term. Diversity is a fundamental aspect within Alpha, one that we're still grasping to manage, obviously, but one that we actually invest a lot. And our culture is something that we actually very proud of at Alpha and myself as well. So I see that firms that take that as a fundamental piece of their strategy will probably be here in the long run compared to ones that take short-term profit into consideration. So yeah, myself and Alpha as an organization are quite advocate of those principles.
Excellent. It's really good to hear. Just before you go, Bernardo, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners? Any key takeaway you'd like to share?
I think just bringing back to the topic of data and technology, I think there's and regulatory changes as a whole. The pace of regulatory change is asking firms big questions in terms of how you leverage specialists within the industry, vendors and technology providers to actually allow you to meet your obligations in a more efficient way. So don't do it alone. Take advantage of the solutions that are in the market to improve the quality of our data, but also to improve the quality of your disclosures. Because ultimately, even if you are doing the right things from a business perspective, a regulatory failure is quite serious and can underpin all the good years that you have invested within your organization. So take advantage. There's a number of vendors out there that can help you.
Yeah, good point. Eyes on the future. Thanks
exactly.
Ever so much, Bernardo. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you to everyone for tuning into this episode of Let's Talk, and we look forward to welcoming you back to another episode. Past and future episodes are easy to find on the FundApps website at fundapps.co, And please don't forget to subscribe either on the website or whichever channel you listen to your podcasts on. We also want to hear from you, our listeners. So if you've got any suggestions on what you'd like us to talk about in this or future seasons, get in touch at letstalk@fundapps.co.